Pavilion Opinions Podcast. Really just me talking about cricket. I've got a lovely yogurt drink and some hot cricketing opinions for you. Well, not the yogurt drink, but that's just for me. I should make that clear. Yes, hello and welcome to the very first Pavilion Opinions podcast. Please don't be put off by the glimmering sheen of professionalism in that introduction there. This is very much people podcast, probably only sort of three or four people in terms of listenership, but never mind, I shall be airing my views on cricketing matters. And first and foremost, we've got the second test at Lovely Lords coming up on Friday between England and Sri Lanka. The latter of whom will of course be desperate to bounce back from their absolutely astonishing domino frenzy collapse on Monday afternoon. It really did come out of nowhere. Most of the first test had been draggier than Paul O'Grady smoking a whole pack of Silk Cut in one go. I don't know if he smoked Silk Cut, maybe JPS. Anyway, the point is, it had all dragged on, and then suddenly out of nowhere, England snatched a win as Sri Lanka crumbled. The ball that swan bowled to get Sangakkara was really a sort of Warne-esque wonder ball, I thought, but I think the most amount of credit has to go to Tremlett. He bowled with really great but controlled aggression. He really put the wind up the Sri Lankans and then got the ball in the right places, just short of length, and he really did the damage. He laid the foundations for himself and Swan to really hoover up the wickets. So anyway, I don't think there were many demons in the pitch. I think it was prepared as a 5-day pitch with coffers in mind by Glamorgan and Swalek, or Swalek Stadium. I don't think that's too cynical to say. And you know the state of county finances, who can blame them? But anyway, we look ahead to Lords. I think there will be a lot more in the pitch, a lot more there for the Sri Lankan bowlers, which will be a great relief to them. As I wrote on the blog the other day, if you lose your spearhead, you lose your spunk. And of course, Sri Lanka have lost two spearheads recently, namely Murali and, of course, to a lesser extent, Malinga. So they have lost an awful lot of spunk, and they did look incredibly drained at Cardiff, the attack. I'm pretty surprised that they didn't decide to pluck the promising young 37-year-old Chaminder Vass out of the county circuit, where he's blazing a trail at the moment. I know it might have been a slightly sort of retrograde move, but I think he just would have been a tremendous buffer for the Sri Lankan attack in this Murali and Malingaless times, just a sort of bridge to help them over this period. And also I think his experience would have brought a great deal of assurance to the rest of the Sri Lanka bowlers and the team itself, after the massive collapse they had in Cardiff. Just might have helped settle them down. But it seems that Stuart Law, the Sri Lanka coach, has ruled that out, and I've got a lot of time for Stuart Law, so when he starts laying down his own name, then I sort of think that's fair enough. But anyway, I think it will be a much closer game. There's a lot in it, a lot in the mix to look forward to, not least, of course, KP, Kevin Peterson's continued bizarre fetish for getting out to slow left-arm bowlers. Did it again at Cardiff when Herath got him with his, well, not unreasonable, but pretty innocuous sort of slow left arm. It wasn't just that he got KP out, it was that from the time Herath came on to bowl, Peterson looked like a man with piles who'd reached behind and instead of grabbing the preparation H had grabbed the deep heat by mistake. and just looked incredibly nervy, incredibly jumpy. Apparently he's been having extra nets this week to try and resolve the problem. I think he's too great a player and too strong a character for him not to get over it, but obviously the minute he walks out to bat, Hirath will come on, and so we'll see what happens. Yes, so moving on to other matters. I hope you're able to watch the match somehow, and I hope you enjoy it. But moving on to other matters now, and of course Shahid Afridi has announced his retirement from international cricket again. This has become quite a regular occurrence in world cricket, Afridi's sort of yearly announcements of retiring. But I think it's a real shame. I think he's a wonderful player. He brings a lot of vim and verve and a lot of chutzpah to world cricket. I know he's not everyone's cup of tea. He gets under a lot of people's skins. And of course under the skin of a lot of cricket balls. But anyway, you can't condone cheating, but there is that impish, shall we say, side to the man. And I think it's a dreadful shame if he has gone for good. His bowling was superlative, I thought, during the World Cup. And I thought the other side of it is, I thought with age he might have rediscovered his lust for building an innings when he bats. He's an absolutely incredible batsman. You only have to watch the century he made on debut against Pakistan, I think it was. Just stunning as a 16-year-old, sensational. And that natural talent has, well, largely gone to waste in the last couple of years. He just doesn't have any patience for batting in any form of the game. At least Chris Gayle sort of can hang around for a one-day international, or more preferably T20 innings. But for Shahid Afridi, it's just no batting innings can hold his attention for longer than about 5 minutes. I don't know if he can go into the nets and bat out six balls without having to put a cigar on, but I think it's a terrible shame that we won't get to see whether that the mellowing of age would have helped him rediscover that side of his game. But I don't know, maybe we will. It's become quite en vogue for cricketers to make Sinatra look decisive in terms of saying goodbye, so you really never know with these things, and perhaps especially not in Pakistani cricket, particularly at the moment. Anyway, so just moving on to the final thing, Jonathan Trott has won the England Player of the Year award. It's only the first Player of the Year award he's won this year, so perhaps a rather slow rate of award winning there from Trott, so something he could perhaps work on a little bit to try and speed up a bit on that front. Yes, anyway, but hilarious sarcasm aside, I think all credit to Trott for what he's achieved. I know there's lots of carping, lots of criticism about him, but for someone like me who grew up in the 1990s watching England regularly do what Sri Lanka did last Monday afternoon, to have Trott there, like this great boulder of obdurate wicket protectiveness, is tremendously comforting. The man is like a balding heated blanket and a lovely cup of Bovril all rolled into one. I don't drink Bovril, I'm vegetarian, but you know what I mean. It just seems tremendously comforting to have him there. So well done. I think if you don't like him, if you think he scores too slowly, that's fair enough, but you're basically asking for a man with a test average of 66 to be dropped from the side. I don't know what it is exactly. I dare say there's a few people who say it wouldn't be 66.6 because he doesn't have enough devil in him, but I'm certainly glad to have him there in the England side at number 3. So anyway, on that note, I will wrap things up there. Thank you very much for listening. I'm sorry that's 10 minutes of your life you won't get back, but I hope you didn't find it too much like a German cucumber. Unedifying, I mean. Anyway, so yeah, this is James at pavilionopinions.com saying goodbye.